Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Global Adventure Show with travel writer Debbie Stone. Welcome, everybody. Today, Debbie Stone is taking us to Patagonia, two different countries. But we're going to start with this is the first podcast where we are going to go to Torres del Paine National Park, right? Debbie, did I pronounce it right, do you think? We don't know. We're not from there.
I think it's Torres del Paine, but I think that's exactly the way you pronounced it, Paine.
Paine, that's it. So Patagonia, and we're going to talk about, we've got part one and part two of these shows, because Debbie always wants to go, okay, here's the most iconic thing, and then we're going to do this other iconic thing too. You like to cross, you did this in Samoa. You went to Samoa, the country, and then American Samoa last, you know, a couple months ago,
right.
And now we're doing Patagonia from two sides, right? Chile and Argentina. So this one, today, we're going to talk about Patagonia, but we're talking from the Chilean side, right?
Correct.
Okay. So is this a bucket list destination for you?
I think it is for me, and I think it is for so many people who love to hike, who love nature, landscape, wildlife, and who have seen the many, many, many pictures of Torres del Paine in terms of the towers, those iconic towers. Torres means tower. And, you know, if you've seen those kinds of shots, those photos, you know, it probably is, I mean, you know, I drooled when I saw those photos, and I, you know, years ago, and I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to make it down there. And the first time I went to Chile and Argentina, I didn't get a chance to get to Patagonia. It's further down, so it takes a bit of an effort to get there, but of course, once you get there, it's like so sublime in terms of the landscape. It's just dramatic and incredibly awe-inspiring.
It looks really, you know, from the photos, like really rugged, yet also like tender spaces too in the nature, like in the actual landscape. There's like these, you can see that it's rugged, but then there's soft parts too. It's diverse.
Like, exactly. It's incredibly diverse. In fact, you know, you'll see everything from these pampas, which is, you know, kind of like the grasslands, to all these, you know, you'll see waterfalls and these snow-capped mountains, and you'll see lakes and all these incredible shades of blue and glaciers and rivers and, you know, everything you'll get to see. So it's one of those that, you know, you go a little ways and you see something else, and you go another bit of when you see something else. And it's just, you know, this incredible array of eye candy, you know.
And I just want to start off with, you got on a horse, and because when, as soon as you said you were going there, I'm like, she's going to eat really good food. I know that you like fish a lot, so I don't know, we'll have to get into the food side, but from what I've always heard is like Argentina and Chile are really good in regards to meat, and also wine is huge.
Yes.
But you got on the horses on this journey, and the next one we talk about. So everything will be linked up, everyone. Debbie's got great stories about her Patagonia adventures. These two podcasts today are all featured with her articles on nationalparktraveling.com. So just type in Patagonia when you go there, because, you're the only person on the site that's been there. So there you go. That's written about it. Anyway, I know a lot of people have been there, but it is, and like you're saying, it is like that kind of like going all the way to these parks. I love the fact that even this podcast is airing during National Park Week, because it's so wild when you go to these amazing parks, these iconic bucket list places around the world, and you've been around the world, like Africa and everything, but, you know, Nancy and I have our background, and our park system, it was the United States who set up the national park system that other countries replicated. And I think that's amazing that our country set it up, and then you go to Patagonia, and it's pretty cool, huh, in a way, when you think about that international connection.
It is. And this, you know, this particular park is huge, and it is a biosphere reserve by UNESCO. It is considered or called the eighth wonder of the world, and it's over a 500,000 acres. It's a world-class attraction, you know. And like I said, if you're an avid hiker, if you love nature, if you're a photographer, this is on your list, you know. And you know, the place that I stayed is called the Estancia Cerro Guido, and this is a ranch, and it's right on the edge of the park. And what I really think is important for people to understand is when you get down there, you want to stay several days because you want to take advantage of getting so far down there and spending the time and the financial resources to get there, that you want to, you know, call a place home base. And they have these estancias in Chile and also in Argentina too, but the estancias are wonderful places to stay because they are typically all inclusive. So you get your meals, you get some tours, you get, you know, your lodging, you get guides, you get transfers, and it's a truly really convenient and wonderful way to base yourself. And this particular ranch was really outdid itself in terms of the hospitality that it offers visitors.
Oh, that's cool. And this is where you, let's talk about the horses. I can't wait, because you also talked about the gaucho culture, which is the cowboy culture there, which is something, you know, I was going, Debbie's going to go play with cowboys. If she goes there, she's going to do it. You're going to play cowboy. And you did.
Absolutely.
You were a cowgirl.
I was. And, you know, I said in my story, and for all your listeners, I'm not a horse person. I've tried to be over the years, but horses and I just didn't seem to hit it off. And I would always ask, can I have the gentle mare? And they would say, here, she's so gentle, you'll have no problem. And then I would have all these issues, you know, that my mare would be nipping at another horse. They would, she would be constantly eating. One time that I tried to cross a stream and she turned around and ran back and then, you know, took off. And so anyway, I've been told that I just don't really, they know that I'm not really in control, which is the truth. I'm not. And, you know, they take advantage of that. And so, you know, to be on a horse in Patagonia, though, I kept saying no to the head guide when he said, oh, you really need to do a horseback riding, because this is a really wonderful way to experience the landscape besides hiking. And, you know, he said, I promise you, this is not, we're not going to be galloping. And you know, and I said, well, I've heard those promises before. But anyway, I finally said, you know, I'm in Patagonia. This would be a really cool way to experience the landscape. Also, you know, Patagonia is really very entwined with culturally and historically with horses. And so it was just my husband and I and the head guide and a gaucho who is basically leading everybody, and it's just a couple of us. And the gaucho is really, like you said, a cowboy in Chile. And they, though, are really, I think they're just symbolic of the Chilean countryside, but they do everything. You know, they're responsible for the animals, the sheep, the cattle, the sheepdogs. They shear the sheep. They help preserve the grasslands. They are really, really important to the landscape, and they're also amazing, like almost like horse whisperers with the animals. So anyway, you know, I did get on Lola, which was my horse, and Lola truly was a gentle mare and incredibly obedient, and I never had any issue with it. And I was able to truly appreciate being on a horse in that landscape. It felt so freeing and so wonderful. And we also learned a lot about the gauchos and stopped to do the whole mate ritual with the gaucho, and, you know, just learned a lot, as well as really enjoyed just, you know, that sense of being free out there in the landscape.
You know, I'm so happy you had a good horse experience, because horses are like the symbol of, like, they are the independent spirit. And,
yes,
you know, we used to have horses and ride through game parks and stuff in South Africa. And I think The vet bills and the human bills, doctor bills, were about the same. I don't know. I've had my share of being on the ground quite a few times. But there is something really special, and going on this and having the right people and some, that I'm picky about horses in tourism areas because of, it's about having actually the right person leading the horse, the right person who knows the horses, takes care of them, and understands them. And so I actually think it's a very important thing when you had a great experience. That's an important thing. That means
It
they know
is.
their horses and they're taking care of them, and it's good. That's a good
Yes.
experience,
And to be, to trust the people that are responsible. I really was skeptical because I've trusted people in positions before and just haven't been, I have had not had the right horse, or I don't know, or they haven't told me what I need to know. And so this was really, really special. And the gauchos don't speak English typically at all when you're in Chile. They just don't. They are interacting with the animals and the landscape, but they really are not interacting a lot with the visitors, So, but we through a combination, especially with a head guide who could speak English, we could learn about, that kind of the gaucho culture and realizing the significance in this particular part of the world.
And so when you were there, I mean, I know we're going to get into the other side, the Argentina side, right? Argentine side, but you're on this, I mean, it's just so beautiful. How high up were you just in that zone? I know we touched on it, but like how high up were you? Then you're on horseback. Did you have to acclimate at all? Just for folks planning on traveling there, what they should be prepared for.
It wasn't for me, it wasn't anything that I had to, get acclimated. I think it's like around maybe 4,000
Oh, okay. So
feet.
that's pretty easy. Yeah.
4,000 feet, and
Everyone's
then of course,
different, but
but the higher you go, I mean, of course, Torres del Paine is a tall mountain. I mean, if you're going to be mountain climbing, that's a different story. But basically, people who are coming from sea level might need to acclimate. I come from Santa Fe, where I'm at 7,200 feet already. So, it to me, acclimating, there was no acclimation for me, But for other people, there might be. I don't know. It depends on, I think, where people live and how much experience and elevation that they, have had. But as I said, it was not a problem.
So you pretty much stayed at the Estancia, right? And the Estancia
Yes.
was like it, and they have other places too. So this is
Oh,
all kind
in
of.
Patagonia, yes, they do. They even have, a few places actually in the park, and then bordering the park as well. And so, when you stay at the Estancia, like I said, you have all these tours and excursions that are offered. If you purchase the all-inclusive regular package, you will have some shared excursions. If you wanted the private package, it means you'd have your own private excursions with your own private guide. We had the shared package, and we enjoyed the company of, a few other people when we would do these excursions or these tours or these hikes. And they offer everything. You can, like I said, go and do horseback riding, fly fishing, conservation safaris. You can do a cultural and history tour. You can, do hiking, big hikes, day-long hikes. So they pretty much have everything. It's a great menu of options based on your interests and also your abilities.
Well, I think this is cool for people, especially traveling to new countries for the first time, that it's kind of that makes it easy to get there and get going. And I also know not just even for first-time travelers or new travelers, I think it's just like We don't need to do 20,000 Google searches to get there. Let's just go do it. You know what I mean?
Right. I think that's very important. And just to let let people know, we booked everything through a company called Pura Aventura, which is a company that books tours in several different countries, in Europe, Central and South America, and they have a specialty in Patagonia. And so they took care of like doing kind of the major, transferring from one place to another, and then accommodations in places, and connecting the dots for us. So it was really easy, and you can, you can kind of privately bespoke your trip in terms of saying what you want and where you want to go and how much time you want to spend. So it really made it very, very easy, because it does get complicated down there in terms of transportation,
Oh, and what about language?
Oh, no problem. I mean,
Okay.
in terms of everybody, everybody at the ranch that we interact, I said with the exception of the gauchos, but everybody else, like the guides and the staff and people that we met, they all spoke English, and it was not an issue. I mean, they're dealing with a lot of people from all around the world.
That's cool. That's very cool. So you get on, you did the horse. I'm so happy that you had this. I'm just excited about it because there's nothing like a good horse ride. And once you get in that, once you get over that, once you, there's a certain thing when you start going and then it all sinks in. You know what I mean? And you
Yes.
get that comfort zone. And when you hit that
Yeah.
comfort zone, doesn't it feel good? Like
Oh,
suddenly
it's
you're like,
wonderful.
oh yeah, I can really open my eyes and look at the world from a different platform. But
Right.
at the end of the day, you may want like a glass of wine if you haven't been riding for a while. Just like after hiking, you need a glass of
Yes.
wine afterwards. I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about this mate, I'm not even pronouncing it right.
Mate, mate.
Mate. Yes,
Yes.
because I know a
Yeah,
lot of people who
it's
do that here. They do it like,
yes.
I actually have a lot of musician friends who do it before they do a show. It's
Well,
interesting.
it comes from the yerba mate, which is it's like it, to me it was like a green tea, but a little bit more maybe bitter. Or more intense, and it's a national drink there. It's a traditional national drink, and everybody all over the place. I mean, when we were in Santiago, we saw it. When we were in Argentina, we saw it. I mean, it's part of South America, the culture, and it's a tradition, and you share, and somebody is basically in charge of the mate and pours the hot water on top of it, and then it's passed around, and people you sip it until all of the liquid is gone, and then they pour more hot water on it, goes to somebody else, and it's kind of this thing that's passed around, and there is caffeine like there would be in green tea, and so there is that sense of like somebody drinking getting their coffee or whatever, but it is there is a caffeinated effect to that, but it's also just a way of, I don't know, just I think connecting and just a custom that you find everywhere, and it's quite nice, So well, we enjoyed it. We enjoyed it in a number of places. So and I definitely got accustomed to it. I mean, it's like I said, I'm a big green tea drinker, so for me, it was not a big stretch. So somebody who hasn't had green tea or doesn't, particularly care for it might find mate very bitter at first.
Oh, wow. Cool. So you're getting the cultural tradition, you're getting that in the food. What was the food like where
The
you were?
food was
Because
delicious. It yes, and yes, this is meat country, but they also do, they have fish too. There's hake, hake, which is a fish that's there. There's also Patagonian trout that's there. And the food was phenomenal. Probably you can imagine in a place like this where it is inclusive that they're going to have many options. Of course, this is a working ranch. There are
Oh, wow.
animals, a lot of lamb. And so you will have lamb on the menu as well. And they do lamb roasts and barbecues and things like that. And, but then they also have a wonderful garden and an organic garden. And so their produce, everything comes from there. It's wonderful. And of course, the wines, Chilean wines
Oof.
and are incredible. And so lunch and dinner, you get, wine if you wish it. And, all sorts of things, there's salads and soups and everything that you can imagine and dessert buffets that are insane. So food is not an issue at the ranch whatsoever. And neither is the service and the hospitality which goes along with it, which is truly very, very special.
I think this is so cool to be like you're out doing the adventures during the day, right? These outdoor horse riding, hiking, fly fishing, like you're talking about, all these different adventures. And then, and you're in nature and you know it. You know, when you have the best night's sleep when you're out in nature all day. But to come back to pure comfort, isn't that the
Yes,
best?
it's truly wonderful. And the thing the other reason that people go to Patagonia, I think, is the wildlife. And
That's what I wanted to get to. Oh, you have
this
some
is very,
crazy
very important.
animals. Oh my
Yes,
gosh.
it's incredible because this park is home to so many interesting animals, like the guanaco, which I had heard of it, but I don't think I'd ever seen it up until then. And it's kind of related to the camel, like the llama or the alpaca, and it's extremely prolific. I mean, they're all over the place, the grasslands. And usually there's one dominant male, and they're in groups with females and the young and the one male. And they're actually really fast. They're very graceful. They're fast runners. They jump like insane. We saw them jumping over fences that were like 7 feet tall. They're very impressive. And then the one animal I was really wanting to see, but is very elusive, is the puma, which is the guanaco's major predator in Patagonia. And the puma is a beautiful creature, and incredibly fast, also just about 50 miles an hour. But it's a sprinter, so they choose typically not to run down their prey, but typically to stalk it and then spring on it. And so they look for the guanacos. And so we tried to see them. The wildlife conservation safaris that are offered, you go out like at sunrise and you try to spot the pumas, and you've got binoculars and people, guides telling you about them. But and they have cameras that they have all over to see where they are and to know that, because it's really important for the cattle, for the lambs, for the for those domestic animals, that they know where the puma are, because the puma will also take down, of course, those animals as well. But like all wildlife, it's wildlife has its own agenda. You're not, you it's just by chance that you get to see them. And so, of course, it's wonderful to be able to see them, but it's understandable when you can't. It's not like Disney where you turn it on and
Call
there's a
up
parade of creatures.
Where and this is the I think that's why people started inventing zoos. They just didn't have the patience. But with this, I mean, the other thing is like there's some relatable animals to, because we are in the Americas, right? And you've got armadillos, which
Of
I love
course.
armadillo.
Yes.
I adore armadillos. I just think they're the cutest thing. But flamingos, which, we have some in our southern parts of
Yeah.
this country and through Mexico and, Central America. Then we've got a condor, which is really this to me, the condors. I always think of that Simon and Garfunkel song all the time. El Condor Pasa, I think it's called. And it just, there's something magical about them. Pinnacles National Park has them, and they've been
Yes.
doing a wonderful rehabilitation program with the condors. But you are like in, and then I've seen them in the Vermilion Cliffs up in the Southwest where they were
Yeah.
both sides. It's amazing. But like out there, that's kind of like their real, I know they're here too. And they're native here, but that's kind of like where I always thought it was their home turf. So for birders, this is a big deal to be able to.
I think, you know, when you see a condor, these are the Andean condors, but they are just, you know, they're just such a massive bird,
They're
and they just seem
huge.
to, they kind of like, they, you know, they catch the wind, the current, and it lifts them, the thermals, and it lifts them up in the air, and they're, you know, flying, they're soaring over the canyons, and it looks like they're barely flying, you know, it's just like the currents are just taking them, and you know, they're scavengers, so they're, you know, of course, looking very, they have sharp eyes, and so they're looking for the carrion, and you know, swooping down to get the scavenging food for themselves. And they are just really majestic when you see them. They're just incredible, you know, to watch them. The other creature that I had not seen was the Darwin's or lesser rhea, which looks like a very small ostrich. I've seen ostriches, which are amazing, especially when we were in South Africa, we saw them. But the Darwin's or lesser rhea, they're like a very small, and they're flightless, and but they run and fast. And also, what I found really interesting is that the female lays the eggs and then she leaves, and the male protects the eggs and raises the
Wow, that's
So, so
unusual.
much for maternal instinct. It's more the paternal instinct. It's really interesting because she'll depart and then she'll go somewhere else, and then she'll go lay, you know, get, and she'll lay the eggs for someone else, you know, for another male. And it's interesting how that happens, but it's kind of a very rare trait for this particular, for animals in general, but this bird in particular is very unique in that respect.
She gets around. I'm just saying.
I'd
She
say
does.
yes.
She does. She gets around. She does. Yeah. But you know, hey, each their own. Each to their own. I'm just saying. But that's so cool. And then also with it being called Darwin, right? It's kind of interesting because he's got birds named after him everywhere, like Galapagos and,
Absolutely.
you
Oh,
know.
God, yes. Yep.
But don't
Yep.
you kind of feel that when you go to a new place and there's new animals, you're like, that's
I
the
love it.
weirdest thing. Like you're
I love
hiking
it.
somewhere and you're like the other day, I told you before we recorded, I was like, here's this really long, big black snake. And my immediate heart goes back to mambas and stuff, you know,
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
I'm immediate, like, pull the dogs, off we go, we're out because, you know, I don't know. I
Yeah.
don't know the
Yeah.
species because I'm in a different terrain. And then I was like, it's a
Right.
rat snake, but rat snakes will go and chase you. And I have been chased
Right.
by a rat snake. Well, I was trying to get it out of anyway. Like there, I had to help remove a rat snake at some anyway. They will retaliate. I will tell you that, even though they're pretty docile and cool, and the sun was just, it was over the eclipse. The snake was like,
Interesting.
and it was weird. It was
Oh.
trippy, and I knew we were going to see a snake. It's weird. Yeah, I will find any snake anywhere for anyone, but you don't know. And so going to different countries, do you ever read up on the animals before you go so that like when you're hiking or on a horse, like you have, like, I kind of know what this animal's going to do, or do you just go like, at this point, let's just let it happen? Because
I mean, I was aware of certain creatures that are down in Patagonia, particularly the puma. I really, the reason we talked about having a guide, like wildlife guides are wonderful because they really, you know, do the research for you and disseminate the information in an interesting manner, and you know, can point out things that you normally wouldn't notice or see, and especially when creatures are camouflaged or blending in. But yeah, I mean, I didn't do an enormous amount of research about wildlife. I just knew that I would be seeing, hopefully seeing, some interesting different creatures that I had never spotted before. So that was very, very exciting. And then learning about the fact, you know, that the puma, what they're doing there in terms of this Sara Guido Foundation, in terms of its research, and especially with the puma and the use of these guard dogs, the Great Pyrenees, for example,
Oh.
that goes with the sheep and then the puma can smell and is alerted to their presence, and the puma doesn't really want to tangle with these dogs. And so this has proved to be, very proficient in terms of protection techniques. So they do that. Then they, like mentioned, they monitor the puma. And they also, what was interesting to learn, which I never knew, was the paleontology aspect of
Oh, I
this
wanted to get
area.
Into that. Yay. Yeah.
And it's, the estancia, is a huge, has a huge, very, very wide, vast area, and it has been that area has been the focus of attention for paleontologists and for archaeologists from around the world, and they have found fossils millions of years back, and also they have found dinosaur bones and have found the first record of the hadrosaurs, which is a type of dinosaur in Chile. So it's really exciting that there's so much going on there, and that there is so much history there in terms of life,
I find that fascinating. And I want to just clarify just in, for everyone. So the estancia is not, it is like a, like we go to lodges and things in national parks here in this country in the United States, but they're concessionaires of the parks. So,
oh yeah, this is not, no. It's not in the park. It's right bordering the park, and it is a ranch, like I said, a working ranch, but it also is quote unquote a hotel or lodge,
Right. And so from doing this, it's kind of interesting because, we see this with farms and ranches across this country that they have this hospitality aspect too, which helps it thrive. But it sounds, Patagonia has been a big focus of attention of conservation, right? And
Exactly.
so I wanted to touch on this in regards to here is a working ranch doing this hospitality, but it's significant in this historic, culturally historic, it's culturally historic. And it sounds like they are, and it, we were talking about this where, when you went to Kualoa, am I saying that right? I don't
Right.
have my notes in front of me. When you were in Hawaii,
Right.
Kualoa, that ranch, I'm starting to think
Yeah.
It used to be like, oh, it has to be a nonprofit or the government that runs places. But I think we're getting to a place now where companies, whether it's a ranch or a farm, in a conservation area or a regular business, we're all starting to understand this conservation arm of conservation of history, culture, and nature, and to be good stewards, and that it benefits everybody for all. And are you seeing more of that as you travel? Like, I think Estancia
Well,
sounds like a really good place that has this
example, yes.
border, and then here's the park that's all protected. Here's this ranch bordering it, but is respecting everything. And
Absolutely. And I think what you call, you can call this as agritourism. It's agritourism kind of became big a number of years ago and has gotten bigger. People are very curious and interested in, what people are raising, growing, whatever it is. And the fact that they're able to combine these aspects and also offer a window for visitors, for tourism, for people, travelers who are curious, who would like to be a part of that. And, whether they tour it, whether they have a chance to volunteer with it, I think it really gives people a real grasp of the whole agricultural scene and how that can actually work alongside tourism.
It can, and it can be environmentally sound.
Yes,
You know.
absolutely, without a doubt,
Do
absolutely.
you,
And
and
so,
when you go on these kinds of excursions through a destination like this, and they have, all these different, tours you can take and hikes and guided things, guided, experiences is the word. Don't you feel
right.
like that is a better way sometimes, like in travel?
I think it's a wonderful way to combine several different aspects, and I think For example, the one tour that is very interesting, that the majority of guests that stay at the Estancia, they do a historical and cultural tour of the property. So, you'll walk around with a guide. You'll also hear about the history, who started this, established it, the roots of the whole cattle, the sheep industry in Patagonia, the mountain climbing lore. Then you'll go around and you'll look at the stables, the orchards, the gardens, the greenhouses. You'll go to the shearing shed and you'll get to see sheep being sheared, and you'll get to watch how the sheepdogs are herding the sheep out of the barn and how the gauchos are working with the animals. And so it really gives you just an incredible insight into such an important part of that culture there. Yes, it's wonderful to go hiking there, of course, and most people want to go and explore in it. But this part of it, I think, is the other part, the other half that is, to me, makes rounds it out and makes it, I don't know, it just makes it fuller, to have all of these elements together.
Yeah, it gives you a fuller picture of the timeline,
Correct.
and when it's connected to people and stories and way of life, and you can actually experience it, you get it.
Yes.
But if it's
Yep.
like, yeah, it's a big deal. And I'm just glad that you saw Pyrenees, dogs, because we used to have one when we were in South Africa.
Oh,
Mandy
they're pr pretty
has,
gorgeous, aren't they?
aren't they? Oh,
Yeah.
and
Yeah. They're
smart.
incredible. Oh, they're
And
so smart.
smart. They are
Yeah,
smart.
very smart.
So
Yeah.
everyone, Debbie's article, we're now again making sure we're in the right country, right? This is the Chilean side.
Chilean side, yes.
Yes, she's Chilean. She's chilling in Chilean. Anyway, so it's Estancia. Anyway, the link is there in the show notes and in the article. Estancio, I'm not going to, Cerro
Sierra
Guido,
Guido,
Cerro
Sierra Guido.
Guido.com. Is the website, but I'm going to have that link in the show notes. Also, her link to her article really has everything, so you can see photos and really read the article that gives you more in-depth information. And also a link to pura-aventura.com.
Yes.
If I'm pronouncing this wrong, I'm very sorry. Until I go there, I'm never going to get it right. So it's my way
Well,
of going
you did pretty,
places.
I would say you did pretty good.
But I really, you did some bucket list things here,
Yeah,
I don't know.
it
It's just,
truly is
that is
special.
just, even the word Patagonia just makes you like, wow. Yeah.
Yeah,
It just, you,
it's so
yeah.
worth it is so worth the effort to get there. It's beyond worth the effort. It's one of those things that just exceeds all expectations.
Well, everyone, we're going to go to part two now. So stay tuned. Go to the next episode in the playlist of wherever you're listening. And we're going to go to Argentina now, right? Is that right? You're good with
That's
that?
right.
All right, Fire
Absolutely.
Monkey. You see, maybe you had to like the fire monkey and the horse. I was thinking that. All right, everyone, stay tuned. Thanks for joining us. We're off to the next episode.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Big Blend Radio's Global Adventures Show with travel writer Debbie Stone. Debbie is here every fourth Tuesday. You can keep up with us at bigblendradio.com.